Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event. Able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
Charlton was absolutely essential. If I hadn't gone up to see Charlton, then none of the rest would have happened the way it did.
They gave me work when I didn't have it.
That's where it all began, in Charlton.
Charlton was a stepping stone.
You want me to get into the whole thing about how I heard Charlton was a front for the mob?
Management there was, I think, questionable at times at best.
Ooh, they were no good, they were mean.
I think this was a matter of, right hand not talking to the left hand.
These two gentlemen met in jail.
They put together this company called Charlton because both of them had a son named Charles.
And then when they got out, they started publishing.
At one point, they actually did have to move the comics operation into a bowling alley.
Suddenly you hear a strike and somebody going, yeah!
Charlton was a sidewater of a sidewater, and they were out there doing their thing, and nobody was paying any attention.
Charlton was just a hodgepodge of weird titles.
It was the three-legged dog of the comics.
Guys were free to do really whatever they wanted within the boundaries of, good taste in the comics code.
C-A-T-A-P. Yes, cheap. They were cheap.
Hell yes, they're cheap.
What they needed was carbon-based life forms who knew how to type.
I don't know how much I should be saying about this.
Charlton was selling some of their characters to multiple people. Yeah. That's kind of funny.
Well, I'd be willing to confess to a felony on camera. Sure.
The printing press that they had was used to print cereal boxes, which is a whole different process altogether.
Printing was horrible.
At Charlton, we were getting $4 a page.
Would you believe I was getting $8 a page?
But there was a little bit of less quality, I'd say, when you get that Charlton book.
Paper was much lower quality than anybody else was using.
You could smell them beginning to decay even as they were rolling off the presses.
They decided to shred tons of archival comic book pages.
Somebody just throwing out these original pages because they couldn't possibly conceive of them being valuable.
The cover might not be as slick or glossy as the Marvel or the DC one.
Or you'd pick up a comic book and the wrong insides would be in the cover.
Beautiful artwork. They laid on the floor so the guy painting the seal didn't drip paint on the floor.
And if it was a bad snowy day, they would throw them down on the floor so it would absorb all the slush.
It's something out of a sitcom, which I suppose is why you're making this documentary.
Charlton has its place and deserves to be remembered.
There was a creative, powerful force that lived at Charlton Comics, and it was producing top-quality work.
I loved working for Charlton. I could have used more money.
There wouldn't be a Watchmen if it wasn't for the Charlton characters.
I think Charlton should be proud of the stuff they put out.
It showed in the work. I mean, some people were busting their butts and coming out with amazing stuff.
I am perfectly willing to say sometimes you really do win the lottery, and I did.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host Dave.
And John.
And John, you've heard of Blue Beetle, right?
Yes.
The Phantom.
The Phantom? The yes. Original Phantom?
The original Phantom.
The purple guy. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, and then Captain Atom, of course.
Yes.
And have you ever heard of Yellow Jacket?
Yeah, I've got a nest of them in my backyard.
Well, these are a lot of great superhero characters. A lot of them now are part of DC. Some of them are, I believe, floating around with other independent companies. But they all started at a company called Charlton. Do you remember Charlton Comics?
No. I remember Impact Comics. I remember Image Comics. I don't know Charlton.
See, that's the whole thing. A lot of people don't remember this company existed. But our guests this week are correcting that issue because they're working on a documentary about Charlton Comics. Yes. So everyone, please welcome Keith Larson and Jackie Zabushka to the show.
Hey, guys. Hi, guys.
I was really hesitant on that. I was trying to make sure.
Word.
It did
Yeah, the applauding that we're going to insert in there after this is going to be for him pronouncing the name right, not for, you know, the intro.
So how are you guys doing?
We're doing great. Just working hard on trying to get this thing moving forward, and thanks for having us on.
Oh, no. I mean, once I watched the preview you guys have on your website, I knew I wanted to talk to you.
Oh, wow. Oh, great. Thank you. Thanks. Very kind.
It's the interviews so far that you have, well, the little taste you have on the website are perfect. And it's true. I mean, I'm kind of saying it tongue in cheek, but a lot of people forget about Charlton Comics for some reason. And a lot of great characters started there. Some didn't start there, but were adopted by them and then went on to DC and other places. And, I think it's an important story to tell. How did you guys start it with this?
We agree with you, actually. We were at a comic convention in Bridgeport, Connecticut, a little over a year ago, and it was late afternoon-ish, and our feet were killing us, and I happened to look up at the Ribbon scoreboard, which was promoting events throughout the day, and I saw Denny O'Neill, Bob Layton, Paul Kupperberg's name fly by 2 p.m. in XYZ room, and I said, oh, let's go to that. Those guys are great. And, you know, I'm expecting to hear about Iron Man and about Batman and
right.
Why Paul killed Archie and all this stuff. And they said, you know, you're probably expecting us to talk about the who's who's, but we're going to talk about Charlton Comics.
And we just kind of were like, oh,
yeah,
what's that?
And I actually whispered to Jack, said, look, you know, let's just rest up for 10 or 15 minutes and kind of politely work our way out the door here and not disturb anybody. Within
2 minutes,
2 to 5 minutes, we were in the second row. It was captivating. And hearing the stories that came from Denny and Bob and Frank McLaughlin and Jose Garcia Lopez and Paul, and, you know, it took a while to sink in. And actually, the next morning is when it hit me that, oh my God, I'm so dumb. This is a documentary idea. It's sitting right in front of me. So I called Jackie back and said, what do you think of this idea? She was back over in 20 minutes and back down to the convention we went, paid to get in just to cold pitch them. And that's where it started.
They said yes, weirdly enough.
right. Well, I mean, I have to imagine, you know, like I said, it's a story worth telling. And I mean, I know especially Denny O'Neill is a great storyteller. And I have to imagine, you know, he even says in the clip in your little presentation, if it wasn't for Charlton, he wouldn't have gotten to some of the other places in comics that he was, you know. So, yeah, I mean, so have you learned anything that really surprised you so far?
Everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
Everything.
Jackie's our master historian, so I'll kind of defer to her, but the more rocks she turns over, the weirder this story gets.
It's great. It's super great. It's super skeevy at times. It's scandalous. It's everything that a movie should be.
So is this like the straight out of Compton for comics?
I mean, totally, yeah.
Okay, now I'm scared.
Except we don't have bitches and hoes. I mean, we've got villains and foes.
Nice.
Yeah. And it's true that the, you know, like Denny said, and they all say it, everyone to a man. And I think in, David, we kind of traded emails about this offline, the Neil Adams thing.
Right.
People are astonished that he gave us the time he did. And he's a tough interview to get. But you mentioned Charlton. It's just like these guys just kind of buckle at the knees for some reason.
Yeah. When we started our interview with him, the first question, you know, he was kind of like not really making eye contact. He seemed like he was doing a whatever interview. But then as soon as we started asking Charlton specific questions, he just locked eyes and it was over. We couldn't get him to stop talking.
Yeah. He came alive completely. In fact, when it was time to quit, he wanted to keep going.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah. So, and they're all like that. Denny's been like that, and Bob, and like every single one of these guys. You mentioned Charlton, and they're all bored. So it holds a special place in their heart.
Right. And so, what is it? You know, I mean, and I obviously you don't want to give away too much before your movie's out, but what do you think it is that it makes it so special to them?
This is like that teddy bear you had as a child, and then it gets destroyed later in life. And when you're like 90 years old, you're like, you know, I really wish I could just go back to that time where I could hold that teddy bear and love it all over again.
they often, to a man, cite the fact that they had a lot of creative freedom with very little managerial oversight. And as long as they stayed within the, as Paul said on the trailer within the bounds of the comics code. Mm. They were pretty much able to do whatever they wanted. So they lost that when they moved on to the juggernauts, the Marvel and DC. They traded freedom for bigger salary. So I think, you know, now that they're in their twilight years, they're looking back and saying, geez, you know, I really got to stretch my creative muscles over there at Charlton. And then, you know, it's like they forgot about it until you bring it up again. And then they kind of all get very nostalgic. And it was a really special time, I think, for that reason, that they had all that creative latitude.
Right, right. Cool. And you know,
Ditko, in the case of Steve Ditko, he left Marvel and went back there for one third the pay.
Mm-hmm. And right, right, right.
People tell us that he was never happier than working at Charlton. He was bubbly and bouncy and jokey and did, you know, a prankster. And all you hear about Steve Ditko is that he's this weird recluse. So I don't know what happened to make him that way. But at Charlton, they said he was quite the life of the party.
Interesting. So is that are you still trying to get him for the documentary?
Oh, we certainly are. You want to tell them what we're doing
with
with Mort?
Yeah. Well, hopefully by the time this podcast airs, it won't be that top secret. But we, I'm sure you've heard of the Charlton Revival.
Mm-hmm.
That's being led the way by Mort Todd. And they're starting to do some Steve Ditko material with the Charlton Neo line. And with that, Mort has to send off materials to Ditko to have it approved. And after Mort talked to us, after we met Mort for the first time, and he realized how serious we were about the project, and we weren't just some fanboys looking to get a couple autographs, he said, well, I have to send Ditko these books, and maybe instead of sending them UPS, I could send them by courier, and maybe that courier could be you. So if and when I go see him, which I'm keeping my fingers crossed, it's not a done deal yet, hopefully I won't fuck it up and maybe we can, you know, become geek gods by getting Steve Ditko to go on camera.
Well,
yeah. We've put together alternative plans, like, you know, he only accepts letters handwritten in pencil.
Yep.
He will reply. He'll handwrite you back one. So that's one of our other approaches. And we're also having every one of the artists and writers we interview that worked with him, like the Dennys, the Joe Sinnott's and all them, are addressing him direct on camera and pleading him to join the movie.
And I mean, it's not necessarily pleading. It's really heartfelt. These guys really looked up to him. They enjoyed their time with him. And this is Charlton. We don't care about Marvel, or we don't care about DC, and we don't want to hear about Spider-Man. We want to hear about Charlton. So that's why Ditko's important to this.
Right, right. And I kind of, just from what I've read about him and what I've heard, you know, from other people, if you leave it at that, like, we just want to talk Charlton, just talk The Question and Captain Atom, you know. And
Mr. A. Yeah.
Right, like, that will get him. Don't talk Spider-Man, because We all know those stories at this point. And
sure,
you know, right? Yeah, I don't see why it shouldn't work. We have our fingers crossed for you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah. That would be such a huge win.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna go knock on this door and be like, "Holy shit, it's Steve Ditko." Not gonna happen that way.
No, we'll send John over for that.
Yeah, you keep me around for something, I know.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, though, guys, it's, for me, it's kind of weird, too, growing up reading these guys. And, you know, now I'm in Denny's living room, and it's just kind of weird.
It is.
You know, and we recently traded emails where he said that he would go with us to make a public appearance and play kazoo if it would help raise money for the movie. That's amazing.
We might not turn that down.
I wouldn't.
So, like, if for somebody like me who actually doesn't know what Charlton is, or, you know, what it actually represents, can you, like, give an overview of why this is, why people should see this, why this is so important to, like, the history of comics?
Sure. And just to preface that, we're not far ahead of you. A year ago, we didn't know anything about Charlton either. Like, yeah. I said, we went to that panel and almost ducked out, and thank God we didn't. It's important, I think, to the history of comics, and then I'll let Jackie finish it, is, you know, the legends that we grew up reading, or that are some still working in the business, all started there. I mean, you got your Dick Giordano's, Roy Thomas, Steve Ditko, Denny, Neil, I mean, the list goes on and on. They all had something to do with that company. Granted, a lot of them were doing romance comics or westerns or war stories, what have you, but they got their start there. and went on to bigger and better things. So I think in the history of comics, as far as the creative talent goes, that's a huge story to tell. The fact that Derby missed, Charlton missed the fact that in Derby they had probably 30 of the Mount Rushmore of comics in the building and let them all go is part of the weirdness of the story, I think. You know, they only printed the comic books to keep the presses running, and that's where they missed the boat.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the characters, I mean, you know, the Watchmen are derived straight from Charlton characters, so.
So, I mean, that's just...
that's just part of the pantheon. And
yeah.
And then you got, like, Blue Beetle, who's going to get his own movie now. And,
right.
Fingers
right.
crossed.
Yeah, you know, those kind of things. So, yeah, it's really, really interesting story.
Yeah, I mean, just from the simple fact that before the Comics Code took over, there were so many comic book companies out there, so many publishers. And after the Comics Code Authority did their damage, there were only three major companies standing, and Charlton was one of them. You can guess the other two. They survived that. They were able to get through that hard time when a lot of other companies couldn't and didn't. So that alone makes them worthwhile to have their story told. And it's also, you know, it's the hipster thing to do, to talk about something that's not cool, right? So, and since the internet literally has none of the information that we've been uncovering, we hopefully will be the next big thing, and everyone will need to come for us for the details.
That sounds like a good plan.
Yeah, and, you know, it's kind of funny. It goes all the way back to, you know, the company was founded by two guys who met in prison on top of the whole thing. I mean, the story starts right there.
Yeah, that's...
And it just gets weirder and weirder and weirder.
Yeah.
I'm looking through the list here of comics. Yeah, because, you know, I like to do research on time. some of these comics here, like Flash Gordon and Doomsday...
Uh-huh.
Plus one, I actually remember that. I've seen copies of that. Captain Atom, Blue Beetle, which we all know went on to other places. The $6 Million Man.
Yeah.
Hanna-Barbera. I mean, holy crap. There's like stuff in here that only people as old as I would remember, but there's other stuff that people would never have believed came from this place.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny, the Doomsday Plus One, that's John Byrne. And we totally forgot all about him in this discussion. He was there, too. He got his start there. So, it's a lot of the TV properties they brought on in the 60s and 70s to kind of keep the ship moving forward.
Mainly because other companies were looking to sell them off, and Charlton was like, I'll give you a nickel.
They said like they bought something like 10 or 12 properties for a couple hundred bucks. Think,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
If it was cheap, they'd scoop it up because they knew it would print and they knew it would sell because it already was.
Right.
You know, then you end up with Joe Staton getting his first job on Wheelie and the Chopper Bunch.
Wheelie and the Chopper Bunch. I don't think I've heard of that one.
It's great.
Oh,
yeah. His favorite comic to this day, by the way.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. And it's funny because, that's the thing, too, is, like you said, with the Comics Code, a lot of companies went under, disappeared. A lot of companies were started in the 40s and the 50s. And people, like we're not talking about a company that went under in the 60s. They went under in the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's not like ancient history. You know, it was just 30 years ago. But yet, you ask somebody, oh, yeah, you know, Charlton Comics, they'll look at you like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And you'll say,
they think it's one of those candies you put in the freezer.
And you say Blue Beetle, and they're like, oh, that's a DC character. It's like, no.
Oh.
Right, right. Or Captain Atom, or Judo Master, or Nightshade, The Question. Yeah.
Yeah, The Question, yeah.
So those were sold off in the early 80s to DC because Dick Giordano had gone back over there, and Dick used to supervise the action hero line. They couldn't call it a superhero line at Charlton.
No.
For, I guess,
legal reasons.
Yes.
They called them the action heroes. And when Dick was over at DC and Charlton was starting to take on water, they sold those properties off as a gift, I guess, to Dick. So.
Yeah.
Right.
Cause... Apparently, Alan Moore wanted to use those characters in The Watchmen, and Dick convinced him not to do that because Alan Moore was going to, like, wipe them out. You know?
Yeah. Right. Well, because DC copyrighted the term superhero.
Yeah.
And I always thought that was kind of silly because Marvel will use it occasionally and they use it under a fair use thing, but it's, you know, it seems like a weird thing to copyright, but you
it's
know.
Copywriting an adjective, really.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of silly.
That's one of those ones that probably wouldn't stand up.
I wouldn't think so. I mean, you know, it's just bizarre, But I guess Charlton didn't want to get involved in anything like that, so it was just easier to call them something else.
So action heroes.
Yeah, and they had a very small line. I mean, there's 12 or 13 of them, and that was about it. And, you know, E-Man came later under Nick Cuddy with Joe and Joe Staten. They developed that, and they were going to start another line of action heroes, and that was it. He was, like, the only one.
Yeah.
They never got any further, so.
Right. And wasn't there a small resurgence of some of their characters, I want to say maybe 10 years ago at this point? And it was, I know Daredevil, and I'm trying to think which publisher it was. It might have been Boom Studios, or no, not Boom, Dynamite.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys have any idea what happened with that?
I haven't heard anything about that. I know Bob Layton and Dick Giordano did a series with DC right around the turn of the century, around 2000, called LAW. And it brought back all those Charlton heroes. And Grant Morrison used them all recently in his multiverse or whatever you call that thing, multiversity.
Yeah. Right, right. But it was specifically Black Terror, Daredevil. I'm trying to think who were the other. There was like two others at Dynamite had gotten their hands on. And they had a small series. And I want to say it was 2005 came out. And it was a resurgence of all these old Charlton characters. And then they were around for, I want to say, a year, and then those comics disappeared again.
That's interesting. We'll have to look into that. I mean, part of what we're learning with this, and it's really funny, is aside from the characters that DC has in license that we know of, there's been a lot of hearsay, rumor, and some fact that Charlton sold off a lot of their characters to multiple buyers.
Yeah.
And these were deals like written on napkins or cash handshake kind of deals. So out the door went one character, and then out the side door went the same character to somebody else. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's, then rumor has it one guy from Canada came in and bought everything. So it's really funny that nobody really knows what's public domain and what's not. And the guys doing the new Charlton Neo stuff are using some of those characters and under assumption that they're public domain. So,
right.
And nobody's come forward yet, and it's, you know, they've been printing a lot of stuff. So yeah.
Interesting.
It's okay. Really weird. That's the whole thing. It's so nebulous and weird, you know?
Right, right. Because there were a lot of characters from other companies, like we had said, after the Comics Code, those companies disappeared and no one touched them for years, and they are public domain now. You know, people just don't know half of them exist. And
and part of Charlton's problem was they were also selling characters that they didn't even own the copyrights to anymore because they weren't renewing the copyright license.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just...
You can't make this up.
No, you can't. And then what's even weirder is that, you know, we went down to the Derby Historical Society. We went to the Derby Public Library and spoke to their head librarian. And this is a company that was... It took up 200,000 square feet, an entire block. City block in Derby. It was huge. And it operated for 40 plus years, and there's very little record of it at all. Yeah. There's hardly any photographs. There's nothing anywhere. It's really weird.
Huh.
Yeah. So you know, our work's cut out for us, but Jackie's been doing a great job researching this stuff.
Cool. Let's talk a little bit about you guys.
Cool.
Obviously, you guys have an interest in comics because you were already at the con when you found out about Charlton. So we'll start with ladies first. Jackie, how did you first get
interested?
I'm not a lady. All right, I know John really should go first, but how did you get interested in comics?
Yeah. So go ahead. Let's hear it.
I'll say that my dad raised me right. When I was, I'm going to say 7 or 8, he got me into comics. My first comic book collection was Punisher Warzone.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Did I just date myself? But my biggest love was collecting the Marvel trading cards. And that's how I learned about most of the superheroes, because you'd get the trading card and on the back had their special abilities and their backstory and little snippets of who their foes were. And at 9, I believe it was it's around the 1992 Marvel card line that they had the Stan Lee card. And
yes.
I took that card and my aunt found the address for Stan Lee in Manhattan. So I mailed my card off to Stan Lee with my 9-year-old penmanship saying how much I loved his characters and would he please autograph my card. And my dad gave me one of these gold paint pens that you see everywhere now at the cons. and I included the pen and I said, please sign it with this gold pen and you can keep it. And he sent me back the card with a note, and I still have that card framed in my room. And from what I understand, Stanley used that pen and still signs in gold pen. So I'm not sure if I started that. I'd like to think I did, but I can't claim it. But anyway, yeah, I've been a dork since I could walk, basically. And then I got into, you know, movies and stuff like that with the resurgence. And I guess maybe in the last couple of years, I started reading comic books again, I started going to the cons again, and just forgot how much I loved it. But there was a few year gap where I wasn't really into the comics like some people nowadays.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, but that's my dork backstory. Okay. If you have other questions, I'm happy to answer them.
And how about you, Keith?
It's not bad.
I don't know how or why I got into comics. I just remember somewhere around hitting double digits, I realized that I just wanted to draw them for a living. And I came across John Romita Jr.'s artwork and was just enthralled. So in this, you know, late 70s, early 80s, his Iron Man and his subsequent Spider-Man stuff. So I started trying to copy him. And that's all I did in high school. I just didn't pay attention. I didn't do anything except draw, because that was what I was going to do. And my guidance counselor kind of put the fear of God into me that there's no way you can do that. Coupled with a rejected Marvel tryout book letter that said, keep working on it and try again someday. And I just got so discouraged. I was raised kind of conservatively, the old, you know, get a job and health insurance and like it kind of mentality. Right, right. So the idea of drawing funny books for a living was just, my parents thought there was something wrong with me. So I gave up, and I kind of wallowed around for a while, didn't know what I wanted to do. I quit reading comics right around the same time. This is late 80s, and because I was just so discouraged with the whole thing. And I went into, you know, film and video production instead as a kind of a closest thing, and started reading comics again off and on in the early 2000s. And then again, when I read that they were going to kill Peter Parker a few years ago, I was like, oh, what? So, and I just got sucked right back in worse than ever. I mean, I'm buying up old collections again and stuff like that. So, started going to the cons and just getting intoxicated with comics. And this little story popped up, and here I am working with the guys I wanted to work with 30 years ago.
You're right.
Except they're in my medium instead.
Right, exactly.
It's kind of weird.
Cool.
Yeah, but say never.
Exactly, right. You know, I kind of a similar story, and John can attest to this, you know.
If you pay me. No.
No, just that, you know, I always wanted to be involved with comics, and we started this podcast, and, you know, we've gotten to talk to a lot of great people, you know, and it's, you know, I can't believe that they fall for it. So,
you know, I got to say, too, and Jackie, she works on films and stuff, and you come across a lot of divas and a lot of attitudes. And most of these comic guys are just so down to earth and
so humble.
They're so nice. And, mm-hmm. You know, I called Joe Sinnott today and how you doing? Oh, how's going? You know, it's just kind of weird. It really is. But they're sweet guys.
They're all nice, yeah.
And I think probably because they never earned the big dollars, you know? They're just middle-class guys.
Right.
Who got to be kids for a living.
Yes.
Yes.
They don't even realize that they're legends. It's hilarious.
Well, you also got to add in the idea that these are guys who make a living off imagination. People people who are open to that side of themselves usually are, you know, they're not precluded to the whole egotistical thing.
That's
it's
true.
It's kind of hard to hold those two things in the at the same time, unless you're, you know, paid by Marvel or DC.
But it's been a strange journey, and you know, now we're just trying to get in as many outlets as we can, like thanking you guys again for bringing us on to get some exposure. It's going to be hard to crack into the pop culture sphere. Mm-hmm. You know, you got the average comic book fan doesn't even know that. I heard a couple of weeks ago, Captain America is a comic book. Really?
Oh,
you know, God.
Yeah. So they don't, all they know are these movies and, you know, what they're being programmed by on TV. And so it's tough to come up with something that, you know, is not only not Marvel and DC, but, you know, died 30 years ago.
Right. Right. Yeah, no, I mean, I totally understand that too. I mean, the movies have blown up so big and they're everywhere. And in fact, I mean, you know, one of the things I've been doing the last few years is I've become friends with Greg Horn, and I work with him at the con to help him at his table. And it's one of the things we talk about all the time at the conventions is, like, there's all these people there, but barely anyone's going into Artist Alley anymore. You see them all in the autograph area, you know? They want to...
Yes.
They want to meet the guy who played Captain America, but not the guy who wrote Captain America for 10 years or the guy who drew his covers for, you know, 15 years. No, they don't, that doesn't interest them anymore. And
it's true. And, you know, just we keep getting rejected for panels, New York Comic Con, Rhode Island Comic Con, and because we're just not cool enough with Charlton Comics and all these old guys,
not
you
yet.
Know? And, you know, so it's props to you guys for seeing value in it so quickly.
You know, and again, not to jinx you, but if you get Ditko on it, they're going to beg you to come after that.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then we can turn them down, right?
Yeah. Hopefully. But just promise us, all right, that once you guys, you know, have San Diego and New York banging on your door to come to a panel, that you'll ask us to moderate it for you.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Right on, yeah.
Now, I mean, you know, I'm loyal by nature. And
we're Facebook friends now, so.
Well, there you go.
Does this mean I have to go to Facebook?
We are totally rewarding anybody who, you know, was here, especially in these lean early days.
Yeah, when you see value in something that really doesn't even exist yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a true believer in, no matter what you're doing, understanding where it came from and how it got to where it is today. Like, 'cause I'm a software developer in my everyday life. And I talk to kids who are getting out of school and they never worked in, you know, the older stuff, DOS and working with a trash 80, which, I'm sure John can attest to all that fun stuff. So you talk to them about, you know, the why people develop things a certain way. And they're just like, well, no, I learned this in school and we're just going to do this. And it's like, yeah, but if you don't understand why we develop it that way, you can't ever write good software. And, you know, half of them can't. So, you know, it's
the same way in the video business. The kids get out with the computers now and they never cut on tape or cut film. Mm. So they don't think linear enough, or they're not deliberate with their choices because they can just make a big mess on the computer, you know, and same thing. Yeah.
You know, part of the problem, though, is also kind of like our American culture. Stick with me on this. So, here's the thing. Like, you know, like most cultures, they revere their elderly. They know that these are the people that trailblazed, that created, that, you know, made things the way they are today, that you could live and do even better. And everybody pays homage now to Stan Lee, and that's fine and good because he does deserve it. But he wasn't the only guy. And if it wasn't for all these other players, all these other people, we would not have the stories that we have today that people love to read and that are now going up on the big screen. So stuff that people like you that are going out there and actually uncovering these stories and showing reintroducing us to these people that are the progenitors of this entire industry is it can only be a good thing. And it's like you said, some of these guys, they're so down to earth and everything. They deserve credit, and they probably won't go out looking for it themselves, but they damn well deserve the credit.
Well, they're terrible self-promoters because trying to work with them on social media or the internet is really shoveling sand against the tide. You know, and even, you know, when we went in Denny's basement, I said to him, I was going to ask you to read the phone book to me, but I know we don't have a lot of time. And he just looked at me with the weirdest, like, what? And I just said, I'm just a big fan. You're legendary. And he goes, I am. You know, like you know. He's just a guy, you know, and it's, but you're right. I mean, it's, history's interesting. It really is. And I know when you're younger, when I was in high school, history was boring.
I want to disagree. I thoroughly enjoyed history.
But for most kids, it seems kind of dull. So, you know, you got to try to figure out a clever way to get a point across. But what's cooler than comic books, man?
Yeah. You got heroes, you've got horror stories, romance, if anyone wants to read it. But apparently it was a big seller back in the day.
Yes.
It's got everything.
Yeah, Charlton's got everything, not to mention bad print quality, bad paper, the wrong guts inside of the wrong covers. So it just, it's hilarious. They used to use a typesetting machine to do all the lettering for a while called A Machine was the credit they gave.
Yeah.
It was just this giant typewriter. They put the giant, you know, the 11 by 18 piece of paper with the artwork on it and type. So the kerning was bad. And I mean, the stories are just great. Mm-hmm. It just cracks me up. And Bob Layton's a huge fan of this, and he's really excited. And we were just on the phone last week laughing about all the stuff, the A Machine and the, you know, the fact that they would put the artwork on the floor to hook up the slur time. And it just
goes on and on.
It goes on and on.
Right, right. And that's also in your little video clip about them not respecting the art. That blew me away. Yeah.
You know, told us that when you'd visit the factory in Derby, they were the kids who'd come down and visit. You get a tour, and then they give you comic books. And here, take a stack of Frank McLaughlin's art, you know?
Oh, God.
Which he still keeps the box. He's seen it on eBay, and he's like, they stole my art, you know?
And so what was – shoot, I lost my train of thought. Yeah, and the thing is, too, like you had mentioned, too, with history, you know, we have the Blue Beetle movie coming out, and, of course, DC owns Blue Beetle right now, but, you know, I kind of have to think, when you look at the history of Charlton and what you're saying about have them having freedom and stuff, the guys who worked on Blue Beetle, Ditko and all of them, had the freedom to do what they wanted, so they wrote really great stories, and that's what interests DC into buying Blue Beetle. So if it wasn't for that, there wouldn't be a Blue Beetle movie coming, you know? You know, and that's
been several iterations.
Right.
And I think the definitive Blue Beetle is Ted Kord, Steve Ditko one. That's the one I think they're going to make the movie about, yeah. I'm hoping.
Yeah. So,
Going to that too, you know, with the question, you know, Ditko was telling pretty gritty stories, you know, stuff that wasn't being done at the time where bad guys were dying. You know, and the question was like letting them die.
Yeah, he literally left two thieves in the sewer where the floodwaters were going to kill them, and he left them there. And right. You never heard of superheroes doing
right.
that.
Right, that's the anti-hero way before the Punisher. So, yeah, it was that kind of gritty storytelling. I think that's why Steve was attracted to going back after all his problems at Marvel.
Right. So,
love to interview him about that.
Steve, if you're listening, we want to see you on this movie. So then what's the, you know, obviously you guys are still doing some research, still gathering interviews, but what are the next steps?
The next step, and it might actually be ongoing by the time this podcast airs, we have a fundraiser that we're going to be setting up. We're going to be launching it the week of October 12th. So hopefully, speaking to future me, I hope it's doing well.
We're
going to launch it through Indiegogo. We're going to run it for 30 days, and we have some great prizes lined up. We're not just going to be giving away t-shirts or DVD copies. We're going to have artwork because, you know, people like art, and art should be collected and give us money.
So some of the all the faces in the trailer will be contributing,
yeah.
And then some. So we're still gathering, but we have enough enough artists and writers committed to doing some cool stuff for us. So we'll have a really cool prize pool, with the ultimate prize being coming to the screening and hanging out with all these guys.
Yeah,
right.
At a cocktail party. So yeah, and it's our excuse to get them all in one room, because they always, you know.
They ask us, you know, when we saw Denny, he was like, have you talked to Steve Skates? And I'm like, yeah, we're Facebook friends. And he's like, how's he doing? Yeah. And I'm like, holy shit, yeah, you're asking me?
They haven't seen each other together in a while, so to get them all in one room would be fun.
Yeah.
Cool. Actually, this will probably be going up the 7th.
Oh, okay.
Cool. Awesome. So right before. Perfect.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so future you still doesn't know.
Oh. I need to get that goddamn DeLorean fixed.
Yeah. And
Joe Staton and Nick Cuddy have actually offered to do an original E-Man comic with two of the contributors as the villains. Jonathan and Mort Todd will publish it in Charlton Arrow. So I think,
how about that?
Yeah, that's a cool prize too. Yeah.
Cool. And yeah. And obviously, I mean, I know movie making, there's a lot to it. once you get the, but do you have any plans or what your ideal plan will be once it's finished to for distribution?
Yeah, well, the first goal is to raise enough money to finish the principal photography, because we have to do a lot of traveling to find some of these guys now. They've been splattered all over the U.S. and abroad.
Mm-hmm.
And we've gotten the people in the Northeast that are within driving distance. So now, and that's been completely out of pocket, all sweat equity, to get that trailer put together. We went to those home runs right away.
Yeah.
The faces and the names, people go, whoa, these guys work there? That was our plan, and it worked out perfectly because the response, much like your response, has been overwhelmingly positive. Then from there, we're just going to try to go to the festival circuit,
and
some small theatrical distribution, and hopefully sell it off to Netflix or something.
We just want to, I mean, we're going to keep our options open. We want to know who's interested, because it's, our original thought was just to sell it to, like, public, you know, CPTV, something like that, or PBS. And our other producing partner, he said, no, you're thinking way too small. This could be something great that people really want to know about. And once we got that going, we started thinking, okay, so what happens if we do sell big? You know, we're not looking to get rich, but we might make some money. And we thought back to when we were at that Bridgeport convention, when we first conceived the idea and we're asking these guys to join in. And when we pitched Denny O'Neill, he had a postcard on his table for the Hero Initiative, which is a charity foundation that collects money to give to comic book creators who have medical bills that they can't pay for. And so the charity foundation will step in to help them pay their bills. And so we thought, when we sell this movie and we get some money for it, we'd like to give back, because these guys said yes. So why not support a charity that would support them directly in their time of need? So that's the plan.
Yeah. We want to give a big chunk of the money back to the Hero Initiative, and that's been the goal from the beginning.
Yeah.
So
it's actually awesome.
Yeah. And, the other producing partner, Dennis Peters out of LA, he's a friend of mine I've worked with for a long time. And I was telling him about it. He said, can you send me over the pitch deck? And I said, okay. And, you know, I sent it, and he called up. He goes, are you crazy about, you're nuts. And I said, oh, it's a bad idea. And he goes, no, you're thinking too small. And he doesn't know anything about comics.
Yeah.
So he just read our little pitch that we took to those guys last year and thought, this is a bigger story than you realize.
Mm-hmm.
And he corrected our thinking and got us thinking that way. So suddenly our little 12-person interview pool went to, it's almost, what, 50?
Oh, God, 50.
Yeah.
And growing. Okay. Everybody's worked for Charlton had no idea.
Cool.
So we're also hunting down, you know, some of the founders' family members. We're hunting down people who worked in the factory, maybe color setters, or, you know, even accounting. There's an accountant that contacted us. So, you know, we're trying to get
a story.
The story is accurate as we can.
Not just the legends that came out of there, but the people who ran this factory, the people who, I mean, even if I said, I put a message out there, even if you swept the floor, you have stories, you saw things that we can't relive. So someone needs to tell the story.
Right.
Yep.
Have you guys ever heard of Tug.com?
No.
No, that sounds vaguely familiar, though.
Okay, so here's my two cents that I'm going to recommend to you. Tug.com is a website where they work with AMC and Regal and a bunch of different other movie theaters. And what you do is you say you want to have a screening of your movie on this date, you know, blah, blah. And they give you a range of dates you can select from. And what you do is you set it up where people, say that they're going to come. They pre-purchase their tickets, and you put a percentage of it towards any, charity that you want. So just put it towards the Hero Initiative.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's
so great. I just think that would be a cool way to distribute the movie, you know. Once you're at that point. I mean, I know you guys are a little while away from that, but just a suggestion.
But it did come together faster than we thought. You know, like we were just kind of taking our time with it. And then we did a panel at the Connecticut Comic Con in Mohegan Sun back in August. And that, it just exploded right there. It just went nuts.
And now our day jobs are getting in the way.
Our day jobs.
they always do that.
So actually, but you know, you have a background in media. Have you ever created a documentary before?
I was primarily an editor, and I cut a few. And you know, I produced little shorts and side projects. I shot a feature in the 90s that never saw the light of day. That I look at it now and cringe. But
it wasn't the original Fantastic Four, was it?
No. Well, you got Audi. Actually, I made the new one too.
Oh, okay.
I thought I could do better, and I just no. I just always kind of you know, I got somehow pigeonholed into the make my dreams better. You know, I could never get out of that edit chair once I got in it. So I took a job in video manufacturing last year with an equipment manufacturer, which gives me a chance to step back now and work on my own things. So that's worked out better, I think, right now. So, you know, instead of doing production 50, 60 hours a week for somebody else, I can take my spare time and do it for me.
Cool.
But what's great, though, is I also work in film. I'm a makeup artist and special effects artist by trade. And now I get to be on a, you know, I'm still behind the camera, but it's a different position. But all of these years I've been, I think I put in at least 12 years in the industry. So now all this knowledge that I've learned and collected over this past decade and plus some has really been put to good use. And I also have some great friends that I can reach out to and say, hey, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. Can you give me some advice?
She's doing a great job.
What have you done special effects for?
Do you like bad sci-fi movies? Because I've done.
Am I a geek? I mean, geez. What kind of question? Is that a trick question? I don't understand.
And if you like bad Lifetime movies, like Joe Staten does, I've also done a couple of those. And then I've done stuff that's gone to Sundance, Tribeca, Toronto. But yeah, it's fun. I get to be a nerd. And my day job is still part of the documentary medium. So it's great.
Cool. Yeah. No. Yeah. It's, I have a few friends that are in special effects, and, you guys are an interesting breed. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. We're weird. Yeah.
Yeah. Jackie likes spiders. That's just crazy.
So,
a little girl and run out of the room.
So then, As filmmakers, is there anything that you guys have learned from this experience?
We're learning more about Charlton itself, the actual production.
We're looking out because it's actually, we are doing, honestly, very little work. It's everybody around us that's helping us out tremendously. We just with lining up these interviews, we meet up all day three, and every time we go to another one, they're like, oh, have you talked to so-and-so? We're like, here's their home phone number.
I mean,
it's incredible.
So that's working for us. As far as the actual production, it's just been Jackie and I, or there's a third person, Jude Breidenbach, who's a student of mine, comes along. And the three of us have shot all that stuff on our own.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you know, but we're so adept at production. We've been doing it so long that we don't need to bloat the crew or anything like that. We can get this stuff done.
Yeah.
And we're in and out in a couple hours. And so we're, you know, we'll keep going at that pace.
Yeah. I mean,
there's no reason
it.
to you know, raise too much money to have to hire a bunch of people.
Right.
I'd rather do that in the post-production phase and get some animators and stuff in so we can crank the movie out at the end.
Yeah.
With some really cool graphics and animate the comic books, you know, and stuff like that. That's where I'd rather spend the money.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, that's why our first fundraiser is just very modest, just looking for the money to get to these places to finish the interviews.
Mm-hmm. And to update some of our technology. It's just,
we need more storage. We're shooting in 4K, so
yeah.
Hard drives gobble fast.
Uh-huh.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we're shooting in 4K with the AJA Scion, and the idea is shooting in 4K, and we're going to deliver in 1080, so I can zoom in on a frame up to 300%.
Mm-hmm.
So we can shoot these interviews really wide, you know, get their whole body in there, and then I can make 8 different shots out of it in the end, so without any loss of resolution. So it's really great.
Cool.
So that's another time saver. I don't have to go in and do all kinds of different things or change the shots or anything like that. I just, you know, we just light it and shoot it really wide and I deal with it later. So
Right.
Big time saver.
And that's going to be on Indiegogo, right? The first.
Yes.
Yeah. We were working on it when you called. It's
cool.
Harder than it looks putting those things together.
Yeah.
God, that's what I've learned, that kind of stuff is miserable.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's always a work point to this stuff. It's not a, you know, there's always a little bit of sweat, blood, and tears that has to go into it.
It's true, but we're so in love with this project now that it's just all we want to do. Yeah. Really, it's consuming us now. And that's a good thing.
So, then do you have a Do you kind of have a deadline you've given yourself? Like, you want it out by a certain time?
Sort of, but not really. We're going to go off the fundraiser with the mindset that the more money people give us, the faster we can work. So if we only make a couple of bucks, well, then maybe it might take us 2 years to get this done. But if people want to help us out and they want to see the product faster, if they start donating, we can maybe crank it out year and a half.
Yeah.
I mean, post-production is going to take a long time because we want to put a lot of love in there and reanimate some of these characters, maybe do some reenactments. We want to get creative with it because we don't want it to be just talking heads. We don't want it to be just a history of comics. We want it to be an enjoyable experience for people who maybe don't even like comic books, and we might turn a couple people over.
We want to keep the tone of the trailer, and that's Bob Layton asked me to specifically make sure we did that, you know, not turn it into a boring show. Keep that tone throughout. And how could you not? I mean, it's a crazy story. But, you know, the other thing is we're going to have hundreds of hours of interview footage. That trailer was 19 hours of interview footage.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we've shot three interviews since with Neil Adams and Frank McLaughlin and Jose Garcia Lopez that I'm going to put something from them into a B version for the Indiegogo. So, you know, we'll swap out some of the other guys you see too much.
Right.
But yeah, it's a lot of stuff to trudge through. So when we're done shooting 40 or 50 interviews, we got to trudge through. Each one's an hour to 2 hours long.
Yeah.
So that's where it's going to be, you know, that's where we're going to need some money for like some offline editors to just start pulling these sound bites for us and kind of trudge through all this stuff. So, you know, it takes time, but we're going to go as fast as we can because we want to see it too.
Right. No, because definitely I agree with the tone of the preview. I mean, it's very fun and light, and it comes off as all of them talking about something that they enjoy, you know, and they're passionate about.
And that's what we wanted to do. You know, we front loaded it with all the goofy, oh my God, the offices were in a bowling alley and the paper was cheap and all this kind of stuff. But then we wanted to, you know, kiss black and come back with these guys really do care about it, though.
Yeah.
And they really did love it there. And I think Denny's whole thing about sometimes you win the lottery is when he said that, I was like, oh my God, that's the closer. That'll probably be the last soundbite in the feature. You know, that's gold.
Cool.
Yeah, it's and he meant it. He took a long time. He sat back and thought about it and came back with that. When Jackie asked him, you know, if you could summarize your time at Charlton, what would you say?
That's excellent.
Yeah. So.
All right. So I think that's actually, it's going to be the end of the movie, and I think it's a good place to put a pin in this one. Unless there's anything else you guys want to add before we wrap it up?
Just you guys are great,
yeah,
and
thank you again
for having us on. And, you know, anything we can do to help out your podcast and help promote you and do some cross-promotion, let us know. You're outstanding.
Yes.
Oh, thank you.
You too.
Maybe you guys can come to that live cocktail party screen, do like a live podcast from there with all those guys.
That would be awesome.
You just made my year. That's all I'm saying. All right. Well, on that note, boys and girls, look for that very special episode coming hopefully sometime soon. And until then, as always, don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week.
Okay, now it's my turn. Okay, what are you doing? Taking over Dad's mic so I can be part of superhero speak. Duh. Well, there are better ways to join the conversation. Really? Like what? Well, you can interact with them on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and even Pinterest. Wait, people use Pinterest? And what's Google+? I don't know, something to do with circles. Anyway, you can also see all their posts, including comic book reviews, on their website, where you can also sign up for their mailing list. Cool! Yep, are you still going to try to hijack Dad's mic? Nope, I'm going to try to answer the Stump the Geek question. Nice. So who do you think would win in a fight between Rainbow Dash and Squirrel Girl? Oh, that's a hard one. Oh no, Dad's waking up. Memphis lies!
Oh, what are you guys doing? That cape's gonna get caught in the door.